From the heart of Puerto de la Cruz, Tenerife, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, how can amateur riders climb faster than pros? The Alpe d'Huez record we talked about last week has already been broken by Arthur Blanc, a Frenchman you've never heard of. So how?
We've also got news from the two biggest American bike brands, some triathlon news, stay with us. The latest from the tour, a new competition, and we announced a new partner for GCN, which makes Si here in particular very happy. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that cycling is its own worst enemy when it comes to trying not to look ridiculous.
The opening stage of the Tour de France has taken things to new heights, or perhaps we should say new lows. Not just with oversized helmets on undersized riders, but now net company Ineos's Monty Python-esque cooling strategy.
Unfortunately, it did seem to work.
Yeah.
And the fact is, Si, is the Tour de France ever cool?
Well, that is unfortunately a good point, isn't it? Now, we also learned this week, thanks to RoadCC, that you can buy an even lighter version of Tadej Pogačar's Colnago team bike, and for just £143.80.
The downside is that it comes up a little small, and the chain doesn't work. Plus, cycling nerds such as us will be slightly triggered by the fact that the cranks are not resting at 3 o'clock, but 4 o'clock.
I know. Shocking. Who on earth came up with that? Now, it seems like actually that's quite a high price tag for a microscopic Colnago Y1RS as well. But if it takes your fancy, you can also buy a Canyon Aeroad as well. Or instead, if you want to pretend to be Matthew Vanderpool.
We also learned that we might have a fight on our hands in the Tour de France this year. At least as we film this, there are two tough stages between us talking now and you watching. So we'll be a bit careful. But Vingegaard was in yellow after some innovative riding from his team to launch him into top spot on stage one. And he kept up on stage two, in spite of Pogačar gifting the stage win and sprinting while looking backwards.
I was pretty impressed with that. The backwards riding, anyway, not... Well, Vingegaard was impressive too, but Pogačar's backwards sprint, I mean, that's showboating, if ever there was one. Hey, it's definitely shaping up to be a spicy Tour de France.
Well, yeah. I mean, we said last week as well that records would almost undoubtedly be broken this year, one of which could be Alpe d'Huez, the most famous climb in cycling.
Yeah, it is not the nicest to ride, is it, Alpe d'Huez?
No, it's quite a busy one.
It is, yeah, very busy. It's definitely not the most scenic, and nor has it actually got the best destination. No offence to Alpe d'Huez, but, you know, there are nicer villages out there.
There's nicer climbs out there.
But for some reason, Alpe d'Huez captures the hearts and the minds of cycling fans like no other climb out there. So to recap a little bit of what Dan and I were talking about last week, the fastest ever Tour de France time up that climb was set by Marco Pantani, and he did 36 minutes and 40 seconds.
Last week, though, the French amateur Prism team unleashed a full lead out to send their boy, Arthur Blanc, up Alpe d'Huez in a time of 35 minutes and 38 seconds.
That is fast, isn't it? 20.2 kilometers per hour average, up an 8.8% gradient. But was he really faster than Pantani, who was fated as both the world's greatest ever climber and also in the same breath as one of the world's most infamous dopers?
Well, the short answer is no. He wasn't faster. The actual Alpe d'Huez record is longer, or rather the Strava segment is 1.8 kilometres shorter. Admittedly, the final kilometre of the Tour stage has both flat and downhill in, so it's a lot faster than the rest, but we can see from another Strava segment that Sepp Kuss, an actual pro of course, took about 2 minutes 20 seconds to complete that final section of climb.
Yeah, which would in theory put Blanc at about 37.58, which is sadly only fast enough for the fourth fastest time in history. And that is if he was able to carry on for another 2 minutes, which by the look of him at the end, he actually might not have been able to.
Even so, the fourth fastest time in history is not to be sniffed at.
I mean, I wouldn't say no. If someone was to offer that to me on a plate now, I probably would say you've got it.
Just a bit behind Pantani.
Yeah.
So who is Arthur Blanc? Well, we don't really know.
No.
His pro cycling stats page, which would detail every result he's ever had in major races, is... it's a bit underwhelming, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I found him on LinkedIn, where it looks like he's a ski instructor.
Okay.
Or at least a fan of skiing. But yeah, back to pro cycling stats, he's never won a race. Okay, and although second on a stage of the Savoie Tour de Mont Blanc is good, it was 5 years ago, and it's actually his only ever top 10 result.
Still, it's a more impressive pro cycling stats page than our favourite amateur climbers, Illy Gardner, and particularly Andrew Feather, who has done three UCI races, two of them were DNFs, or did not finish. And yet he too can lay claim to being one of the fastest riders on the planet when the road goes skyward.
Yeah, so the question is then, how can these people, with jobs, seemingly challenge pro riders on the toughest roads in the world?
It's a really interesting question, isn't it? The short answer is that they can't. As we've just seen in pro cycling stats, they can't challenge pro riders because when they had the opportunity, they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair argument, isn't it? Right. We actually don't know Arthur Blanc's background, so we actually can't comment on him specifically. But with Eily Gardner, I think I'm right in saying that in an interview she said she simply didn't feel comfortable racing in the pro peloton, but she also wanted to be a free agent because being a pro, it's quite a kind of constrictive lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, massively. I think there's a lot of personality types that simply can't tolerate the lifestyle, like the lack of control over your own destiny, like the riding you do, the food you eat. I've got a few teammates that spring to mind, and they were so talented. And I think just trying to slot into that kind of that routine and environment just didn't work for them, and they wanted to do their own thing, and it just kind of went all astray.
Square pegs round holes.
Kind of, I think.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people don't like being told what to do either, do they?
Yeah.
Particularly if that means that you've got to do something you don't actually really want to do.
Yeah, and I think it's the balance of, like, some people just love training and turning up for that one race or effort, and some people just love doing loads of racing. But I think if you're someone who prefers to do a lot of training, it's quite hard to, like, move your way through the amateur ranks and the lower ranks of professional cycling because you need to do a lot of racing.
Yeah.
And it can really throw you off, actually, just trying to keep yourself healthy and fit and sane when you are just going all over the place.
Yeah, to be fair, and that does, you know, lend weight to the fact that riders like Arthur Blanc could physiologically be as good as a pro. With Feather, he came to cycling later in life, didn't
yeah.
he? And his numbers suggest that had he spent time as a younger rider doing races, then he might actually have been a really successful pro cyclist, right? But even so, I'm wary making the link between lab data and pro cycling results, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I also think some people just don't want to, like, do that lifestyle, and it's like there's a lot of sacrifices you need to make. There's a lot of changes you need to make to, like, go the whole way through and be like a Pogacar or an Evenepoel, and it just isn't for everyone.
I mean, yeah, that's why I didn't want to become a Pogacar. Basically, I mean, like, I sort of thought about it for a time. I thought, do I want to become Tadej Pogacar? And then I was like, nah.
You could have been it.
Actually, yeah, I'm just not really feeling it. Back to Feather.
Yeah.
The fact that he can survive on a diet of only jam sandwiches and not even drink on long rides makes me think that he is probably quite tough and could have been cut out for that slightly bonkers lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure. There are two key factors we also need to consider here too, though, when considering success on a Strava segment and a Tour de France climb. Firstly, there are many more riders out there in the world that can do one giant effort. There are far fewer that can, like, do one off the back of many other efforts, either previously in the ride or on, like, preceding days.
Yeah, so in the case of this year's Tour de France, Pogacar and co. get their chance at the record after 19 days of racing, and it is, by all accounts, going to be an unbelievably savage Tour de France, isn't it? And I think this is what makes those riders truly world-class, right? Yes, Pogacar could rip anyone's legs off when fresh, but the margin of victory for a rider like him only gets bigger the harder the ride that precedes it, right?
Yeah, and we said it before, but one of the key physiological tests for prospective riders is a 3-minute max test, then a 4 or 5 hour ride, then repeating that test. And the better the pro, the smaller the difference in the results between those two tests.
Yeah, so for a true Galactico like Mathieu van der Poel, according to his coach, the difference between those two tests is actually minimal, isn't it?
Yeah, some of that is training, for sure, but some of it's genetic. So, like, do Feather, Gardner, Blanc have it? I don't know, we'll probably never know.
Well, I mean, almost certainly we'll never know. But we should say, on the flip side to that, I seem to remember Jonas Vingegaard actually got signed as a pro, in part because of his impressive KOM that he set in Spain, actually on the infamous, actually it's not infamous, is it? It's quite tame. The famous Col de Ratés climb that serves as a bit of a testing ground for most pro cyclists in the winter. And, you know, Vingegaard turned out okay, didn't he?
That is very true.
So it can be possible.
Yeah, the second thing, though, to mention is the type of training that pros do. As we all know, if you want to be good at something, you need to train specifically for it. And by focusing on one area, you'll probably lose in others. So if some of those pros decided to go for the KOM on outdoors and were happy to devote a few weeks to it, I'm pretty sure we'd see that time plummet.
Oh, yeah. For sure we would.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if like a proper hour-and-hour climber decided that they wanted to get their KOM on outdoors?
Yeah, and fully committed, kitted up, then it'd be interesting to see what the likes of Pogačar could do with a fresh effort up there.
Absolutely. But all that said, fair play to Arthur Blanc and his teammates, because in any prism...
I get it.
Get it? Yeah.
I get it.
That is a superhuman effort, isn't it? And we should also say that Ollie Bridgewood is quaking in his boots, because he's actually heading out to Outdoors next week?
Yeah.
Yeah, next week, isn't he? And, you know, he was going to have a little go.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I just can't wait to see the talk up there now, though. I do hope it lives up to expectation, because it's going to be a crack in 2 days.
Tell me about it, yeah. I mean, Pogačar is a showman, isn't he? Mm. So I genuinely think, I know it sounds really stupid, but I genuinely think that he will go for it if he can at that point. I don't think he'll sacrifice the Tour de France for it, but I reckon it'll be in his mind.
Have a crack at it.
Don't you think?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I think he will. I think he just likes to win in style, doesn't he, when he wins?
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a record to take. Anyway, let us know what you guys think about all of this. I mean, is it a record that you can trust, I guess, first of all, the Arthur Blanc record? And also, how on earth can an amateur rider seemingly compete with a pro like that? Get involved in the comments section down below. Now, before we move on to cycling shorts, it's time to showcase a little bit of what is in the GCN online store, because we've got some absolute cracking July-themed merchandise, haven't we?
Yeah, big bicycle race-related stuff going on. Some of it might be yellow.
That's right, yeah. So we've got T-shirts, so make sure you check them out. They've been proving super popular. I was about to say redonkulously popular, but yeah. I mean, it is, but super popular. And then, of course, the prints, which have been selling like hotcakes since the beginning of the season. And so we've now got July-themed prints as well. So, yeah, head over to shop.globalcyclingnetwork and yeah, check it out. We appreciate anything that you buy, because obviously it supports what we do, helps us make content that is free for you to watch.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with some triathlon news.
What?
Panic not. We are still wearing socks.
I'm actually not sorry.
Oh, geez, Connor. You spend your life carrying around excess gubbins. How can you not carry socks?
I'm wearing sandals that are like big as a flipper.
All right, fair enough. Right, I'm sorry, folks, that you had to see that. Back to the triathlon news. I think this is important to say. Sam Laidlow has just broken the long course world record. Now, to most of you, that means Ironman distance, right? Only it wasn't an Ironman event, so you can't call it that. It's called the 140.6 record.
We're really labouring this, aren't we?
We are quite, yeah.
Basically, at Challenge Roth, he took 2 minutes off the course record and shaved 7 seconds off the overall 140.6 to set a new world record.
Yeah, so his time was just 7 hours, 21 minutes, and 4 seconds. And that is for a 3.5K swim, something like that, isn't it? 180K bike and a marathon.
That is insane.
It is insane.
When you think about that, that is nuts. Records falling left, right and centre this year, no matter what the sport.
Yeah.
He was also apparently riding an as yet unreleased Canyon Speedmax TT triathlon bike.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating that all of these records are plummeting all over the place. I mean, it's no surprise that if it's going to go in one place, it's going to go in others. But still, I mean, that's some ride and swim and also run from Laidlow. Now, Orbea have officially launched their new Orca Aero road bike last week. Now, we've been spotting it in the Pro Peloton for a month or so. It is, to put none too fine a point on it, way faster than its predecessor. They say it saves 21 watts at 45k an hour. It also has tyre clearance for 37 mil wide tyres, but that's with plenty of space. So in theory, you could go bigger still.
Yeah, one of the things Ollie was most taken with when he rode it, though, was the geometry. It has a lower bottom bracket, a little closer to like a gravel bike than a typical road racer, and that's to give the bike a planted, more confident demeanour, which means it rips corners like a good one.
Yeah. I'm all in for that. I cannot wait to try one. There's one on its way, I believe.
It.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Trek, we should say, celebrated their 50th anniversary last week. So happy birthday, folks. I've got to say, right, it's a big brand that has done a lot for cycling. And genuinely, I think they've made a pretty positive contribution, whether it's leading the way on pay and maternity cover for its pro women's team, which was super admirable. They've hosted World Cup cyclocross races, which again, supporting the sport. And then also, more recently, transparency on reducing emissions as a company. So yeah, big thumbs up to Trek.
Sticking with big American bike brands for a moment, after talking last week about the Specialized Shiv time trial bike, to road bike hack from aeronerd extraordinaire Dan Bigham, it turns out they have a new Shiv time trial bike for Remco Evenepoel at the Tour de France. But they also officially launched a new version of their Tarmac road bike, which is apparently 4 watts faster at 45 kilometers an hour than the predecessor.
Yeah, interestingly, they're also touting a new metric. I think this comes from Formula One, right? Time to finish line, where it's not just about aero, it also takes things like weight, stiffness, bike handling into consideration as well to create this kind of theoretical grand tour stage that's rounded down to 100 kilometres. And as you might imagine, seeing as they've just created this new metric, this bike, they say, is faster than the competition.
Remco's got no excuses then.
Well, yeah, I mean, did he ever? But no. So he's looking quite good as well, though, isn't he?
He is.
I was impressed with his team time trial ride, which felt more like a solo time trial ride at points, didn't it?
It's hard to figure out if it was a team time trial or a TT at times, but yeah. He looked strong yesterday and Sunday as well.
Yeah. Sunday. Now, Isaac Del Toro took the second stage of the Tour de France, which gave Mexico something to shout about on Sunday. Sorry, folks.
Sorry.
He became only the second ever Mexican stage winner.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I loved how made up he was at the finish line. Clearly, just absolutely overwhelmed with that. But what I also thought was super cool is that he actually couldn't have done so without the help of rival teams Visma Lisa Bike and Netcompany Ineos.
Yeah, it sounds weird, but in a show of sportsmanship that happens all the time in pro cycling, but typically flies under the radar, and we think it's worth shouting about, Del Toro had suffered a mechanical problem earlier in the stage, and in the frenzy of the convoy of team cars, both the UAE team cars had driven past him, leaving him stranded at the side of the road.
Yeah, but then the Visma car and the Netcompany car both stopped to help get him back up and running. I don't know what they did, but still, I mean, that is proper sportsmanship, isn't
it? Yeah, it's really cool. Sticking with teams for a moment, we wanted to give a little shout out to the Alpecin Premier Tech team, who have released a 50-minute documentary ahead of tour, giving a little insight into their preparations.
Yeah, it's called Expect the Unexpected, and you can find it over on their YouTube channel. Even as the world's biggest Mathieu van der Poel fan, I have to say, I enjoyed watching it more to see our old Zwift Academy mates, Christoph Ruthoft, who is the director sportif of very few words, but a lot of subtle facial expressions. And then also Christoph de Kegel, who's their genial performance guru, who is a grandma's kitchen that you set fire to, wasn't it?
Yeah. I did, sorry. I still blame that it was the fat in the fan above the oven, but yeah, I did set fire to the kitchen. Sorry.
Christoph is still talking to you, though, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
In spite of burning his grandma's house down.
Yeah, so is his parents.
Nice. Well, there you go. That's a happy ending, isn't it?
Anyway, speaking of Van der Poel, he announced last week that he and his partner will be expecting a baby in January. So while early days, we wish them both congratulations. If he manages another cyclocross world title in January after that, I will be very impressed.
I will. Yes. I mean, if he wants any tips on how to juggle life, handling children and cycling, probably best not ask us.
Don't ask us.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
It'll be all right.
You'll be all right, Matthew.
Yeah. He also said in an interview, I think, with Het Nieuwsblad last week, that he might draw a line under his career in 2028.
I saw that.
Which will come around pretty quick.
Yeah.
But then he'll be 33. That also feels quite old, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to see him stopping at the moment, though, isn't it? I mean, he's still flying.
Yeah. He's the boy. Matthew Van Der Poel. Anyway, away from the racing side of cycling now, I know we've talked a lot about it this week, but I mean, it is quite exciting at the moment, racing, yeah. Isn't it? But we picked up on this quite interesting story from over in Canada, specifically Montreal. So according to a report by CTV News, 9,500 tickets were handed out to cyclists in 2025 alone. That's for fines, basically ranging from $80 to $100, which is up 60% since 2020.
Yeah, it's quite a crazy amount of fines to a cyclist. It's hard to imagine, actually, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Most were dished out to riders not using a helmet on, like, city bike hire platforms.
Apparently, it's illegal to ride an e-bike over there without a helmet.
That's correct.
Which seems fair, right?
And also for riding with earphones in.
One of my personal pet hates, Colin.
Yeah, but advocates have, and I would say rightfully, called on authorities to focus more on, like, stopping behaviours that put other road users at risk more, rather than focusing on these, like, infractions by individuals.
I mean, it's true, right? If you're not wearing a helmet whilst riding an e-bike, the only person who's going to suffer from it is you.
Yeah.
So therefore, it does feel a bit weird, doesn't it, being hit by a fine? Similarly with headphones, it's kind of like...
Yeah.
That's on you, isn't it?
That's it.
Yeah, but they did actually say that there were more fines given out pre-COVID for far fewer cyclists. So whilst the headline stat is fairly bad, like actually it kind of suggests that things are getting better even though there's more of them.
Yeah, but I think the issue is that the price has gone up, so they're really ramping the price of the fine up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's less fines being given out, but they're like raising the amount they're fining people, which is like cause for concern.
Well, yeah, and you don't want people to stop bicycling, do you?
Well, that's it. And I think the fact that it's focused on these people who are using, like, e-bike rental platforms where you're trying to, like, they're the sort of people trying to encourage out of cars and to get used bikes more, and they're the people being punished. And it's the sort of journey you take when you come out of, like, a meeting or an office or somewhere in the city, and like, oh, I'll just jump on the bike instead of jumping in that taxi or whatever. So I feel like this needs to be kind of given a bit of voice and re-looked at.
Yeah, go on, Montreal, sort it out. I noticed actually this week as well, talking of public hire bikes, that Lime Bike went public. So they floated on the stock market last week, apparently. Yeah, so they're actually a subsidiary of Uber, apparently, but they floated on the stock market. And to my mind, they've been pretty successful doing what they do. They've even turned lime into a verb.
Really?
Yeah, people lime around London. Yeah, seriously. Like friends of mine that don't do bikes. And they'll be like, oh, I'm just going to lime over here.
Oh, I didn't know that's a thing.
So there you go. So they've floated on the stock market and they've also created a verb.
There you go. Right. We mentioned that we had a new partner here on GCN. We are delighted to welcome POC on board as our eyewear partner. Si has been sporting these for a few years now. And in that time, several people have been asking him what shades he's been wearing.
Oh, at least several. Yeah. Right. Yeah, at least several.
Now, we do want to stress smaller sizes are available.
Yeah. No, I'm joking ever so slightly there. My go-to pair for all of you, genuinely, who have been asking, are the Devours, which are very big, granted. But then in our sort of armoury, we've also got the Aero Propel. Lloydie and Alex have gone for those. And then I've just ordered a pair of these, the Aspires, as well. You can get different widths, by the way, for different face shapes. And the arms are adjustable for length as well, as well as all of the usual lens configurations and stuff like that.
I actually went for the Devours because I've got quite a big head and I just love having big lens. So suits me to the ground.
They're good, aren't they?
Yeah.
Wicked field of view on them.
Yeah, amazing. And the lenses are...
Yeah.
Nice.
And we look cool as mustard.
If you can ever say that about me, I'm not sure. I try.
Good point.
I try. Anyway, last up in cycling shorts, we do have a new competition for you folks starting today and running until 10 a.m. British time on the 17th of July. Your chance to win one of five £100 sterling gift cards for Precision Fuel and Hydration. They are the race nutrition partner for Lotto Intermarché this season and, of course, at this year's tour.
Yeah, and perhaps more importantly, our nutrition partner as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Fueling us for all sorts of shenanigans. Mm-hmm. So all you got to do to enter is name which other World Tour cycling team that Precision Fuel and Hydration sponsor. Okay? I suggest Google would be your friend. If you're struggling to think, you can find the link in the description below this video. Now, unfortunately, this competition is only open to those of you in the UK, in Europe, the USA, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. So anyway, good luck to you all. Apologies if where you live in the world is not covered by this particular competition. But stay tuned, there'll be more coming. It's time for hack /bodge of the week. First up, we've got this one, which I like very much, from Matt Haskell. His homemade ultrasonic cleaner. Now, we all need an ultrasonic cleaner, don't we? This is a little gizmo that you fill with degreaser, and then it makes this horrendous noise whilst it's gently vibrating around, and it loosens grease on even the most horrendously greasy of parts. Oh, Matt has just put his chain in an old takeaway box full of degreaser. It looks like it's got a bit of a curry vibe still in there, actually, right now. And then taped it to the top of his washing machine, which has obviously vibrated for a couple of hours. And then, hey, presto, he says he's got buttery smooth and quiet shifting on his gravel bike as well. So I actually like that a lot. I mean, if that works, genius.
I mean, yeah, and this is the sort of thing I do at home, and it's like someone would like look at it and be like, what on earth?
You actually do this?
I would. I mean, I'm going to say it's a bodge, because I'm worried that this is going to vibrate off and it's going to...
Like, maybe he's taped it, look.
It's going to come free. All that degrease is going to end up in your clothes in the washing machine.
How is that going to go from the top of your washing... The washing machine's waterproof.
I don't know. Find a way. All right. Mess finds a way. I'm nervous of this.
I think we're split on this. I think that is a hack.
Okay.
I'm going to try it. Connor, you think it's a bodge and you're not going to try it.
I'm not trying. I'm scared of the mess, Matt. I'm sorry.
All right. Fair. Well, yeah, fingers crossed your washing machine has survived this. But no, I like that very much. Right, what's next?
So this has been sent in by Martin Hutchinson. Printed city cleats. This is really interesting. So these are polyurethane cleats on my old city mountain bike shoes disintegrated, despite the fact the uppers were still in great condition. Rather than tossing the shoes, I decided to CAD and print replacement cleats, tried 3D scanning the sole that turned into a deep rabbit hole. Ultimately, I used masking tape, traced the outline of the old cleat on the shoe, and imported a picture of the tracing into CAD with a scale for reference. 3D printed from TPU and glued them on with E6000. No, not sure what that is. Strong enough to hold, but not so tough I can't take them off and replace them. The big bonus is the heel is way more stable to walk around in, no more rolled ankles.
So I spent most of that trying to work out what on earth he was talking about, but it's not a cleat, is it? It's the rubber doofers at the bottom. He's replaced the tread on his shoes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you know what? Like, it doesn't look super duper nice or grippy. In fact, it looks positively sketchy if you were to step off your bike anywhere. But if you have breathed new life into your old shoes, I'm here for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a hack from me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like it is 3D printed as well, yeah. So that's a hack.
Yeah.
So yeah, well done, Martin. I like that very much. Right, then, next up, we've got this from Robert Ballard. I flatted Hold My Bike is the title. This is a photograph of a very nice-looking Colnago that's kind of like hung on a fence, basically, hooked over with the handlebar and then also resting against a pedal with the back wheel off. I mean, it's quite a neat bike stand, isn't it? Anyway, it says, I found that a fence, guardrail, sign or similar can serve as a perch for your bike, keeping your derailleur and other gear off the ground while you remove your wheel. So there we go.
Very cowboy-esque, this photo.
It is, yeah. So he says, the drop is very secure, but keep an eye on the pedal. Take care to minimise the chance of marring or scratching if you're precious with your ride. I mean, I think that is the point, isn't it? You've got a very posh bike, sort of casually hung over a fence there, but if it works...
It worked. A little precarious. I'd be worried of that pedal slipping off and, like, swinging around and whacking you in the head.
Yeah.
or your riding buddy while you're doing your puncture, but...
We send bodge, then?
I'm feeling pretty harsh today. I'm going to go bodge. I feel like there's a safer way to hang your bike.
I think I'm going to say bodge as well.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Robert.
Sorry.
Try again. I kind of feel like just put your saddle on the fence or just rest it on the floor sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Right, Pete Pereira, what's he got for us, Connor?
The tandem mud guard when one just isn't enough. Oh, wow. So what on earth is going on here? Two mud guards. One of my colleagues started to ride to work last year, quickly became a committed all-weather commuter. One rainy morning I arrived, he made a homemade solution to an eternal problem of a soggy backside, a bespoke rear mudguard fashion what I can only describe as whatever was available at the time. I admired his ingenuity, but I agreed his creation was perhaps a little more prototype than production model, and a proper clip-on mudguard might be worth an upgrade. A month passed, every morning I ride past his bike, only to find the homemade master build still proudly in service. Eventually, I took matters in my own hands, bought a new proper mudguard, and he was very grateful. There was no original one. Today marks 1 year of him commuting around London, what can only be described as the world's first double rear mudguard system. It might not be aero, it might not be elegant, but I have to admit, in 12 months, I've never seen him arrive with a wet arse. So it's basically two mudguards.
Two mudguards strapped to a bike, one of which is sellotaped to his saddle at quite a jaunty angle.
This is a bodge if I ever saw one, I'm sorry.
I mean, it is. Like, I like the fact that he's still rocking it. That's cool. But there's an awful lot of bike there that can spray water up at you that is not covered by mudguards. So yeah. I feel like this is, if you excuse the pun, a half-arsed solution at best, isn't it, really?
You just can get a sore bottom from the sitting on the paper and the like sellotape and stuff. And the plastic.
I mean, if they've been rocking it for a year now,
yeah,
I'm assuming they're either used to it, they've either got like a leather backside, or it didn't give them any problems in the first place. But yeah, I just don't think there's any excuse for keeping that on your bike. Not when your colleague has bought you a nice mudguard.
A nice mudguard, yeah. I'm sorry, it's a bodge. Yeah. It's a bodge, definite bodge.
An ungrateful bodge, okay. Right, that is the end of Hack or Bodge this week. I mean, that's a fairly poor selection. We've had one hack, haven't we?
Yeah, that's a rarity.
An absolute rarity in this day and age. But anyway, as always, next week, if you want to submit anything, either a hack or a bodge of your own or something you've spotted out and about, then you can, of course, send it to us via the GCN uploader. I can never remember the address, so the link is in the description. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below. Pick a winner next week. We will give you the photo that you have to caption in just one moment after we've dealt with the results from last week. We gave you a photo of Lenny Martinez of Bahrain victorious. There's a lot going on in this photo, Connor.
Yeah, it's a great photo to get that. We do have a winner, though. Should we announce it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Jeremy Pritchard, congratulations. Jeremy Pritchard, 569, I should add, just for any other Jeremy Pritchards out there. You went with, you're as cold as tights, you're willing to sacrifice our gel.
Do you know what he's talking about?
You're as cold as
tights. You're as cold as tights, you're willing to sacrifice
our gel.
I thought that was quite good.
I like that.
Right then, this week we have a jubilant-looking Isaac Del Toro and Tadej Pogacar at the end of stage two of the Tour de France. In Dan's absence, do you want to give it a nudge, Connor?
I'm not sure, Si. I mean, I don't know. I'm terrible at these. You go for it.
Pogacar has clearly been working out. He can now squat 50 kilos.
Yeah, I like that.
See what I did there?
I like that.
Del Toro, featherweight, 50 kilos.
Let us know if you can do better. They did celebrate. They went absolutely crazy at the finish.
They did. I was slightly concerned that one of them was going to fall over on their skinny cycling shoes.
It was interesting as well. There wasn't as much of a ruckus after the stage. I only just realised that. You know, they normally just get an absolute scrum. It was very, controlled.
Was it?
I wonder if that's a change in proceedings.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
They kind of didn't know what to do with themselves. They were kind of there like...
Maybe all the scrummy types have gone over to the Football World
Might
Cup.
Might be that.
All of those journalists. A bit more like, you know... Yeah, I don't know. Right, anyway, as Connor said, get involved in the comment section down below. Put your best captions in. We will pick a winner next week.
Comments of the week now. Starting off with last week's show. This was sent in by Team ATTAC. It's amazing that the 1990s blood doping science, if the Pantani allegations are true, has proven to be better than 30 years of bike tech evolution, improvements in training and sports nutrition science. Just do drugs, kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the only conclusion you can take from it.
Maybe he was just a once-in-a-generation talent, though.
Well, I mean, irrespective of how much dope he took, he was obviously really blooming good, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like, same with Armstrong, right?
Yeah.
You can't take away that. It's just unfortunate you can take away their results.
Yeah. Although, as Plato said, cheating, it doesn't get you too far. I mean, he said it in a much more kind of articulated way than that, but it catches up with you in the end in life.
Yes.
It was his argument for mental health.
What was it?
I think it was Plato that wrote that one, but I'm not sure.
The comments section will keep you honest, Connor, if you've just completely plucked that one out of thin air. Perhaps the biggest debate in the comments of last week's show was whether or not Americans pronounce niche niche. So there's a fair few comments here. John Jacobs said niche in the US, oftentimes pronounced niche, sometimes niche, which I felt was very helpful. So thank you, John. C. Bouch said, my friend owns a bike shop called Slow Twitch Niche. The rhyme doesn't work if it's pronounced niche. No, it really doesn't. So Slow Twitch Niche there. Tall Richard said, American here. Yes, people do say niche as niche, but they're wrong. I like that very much. Anyway, carried on going. So I think we can safely say that some Americans say niche, others say niche. Both are right.
I'm saying an American voice in my head. I'm not saying it out loud.
No. Anyway, there you go. So there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then Coach Alex Reynolds said, you guys think about your end-of-show nuggets. Who knew? Yeah, we give lots of thought to things on GCN. Yeah. We haven't given any thought to it yet.
But no, we'll think of something as well.
Yeah, absolutely we will.
Paul Berry said in this, the 70-year-old bike, is that Dan's from when he was a junior?
Oh, this is under the 7 decades of Tour de France bikes. I like that one, Paul. Yes, I like that very much. And then loads of great comments underneath the career video. You and Ollie were on absolute flying form. Humour-wise, your form on a bicycle was absolutely woeful.
Taking a bit of a nosedive recently, but I've enjoyed it. Nonetheless, good. It was a great trip. I loved it.
01 Fozzy S, you guys always kill it with these epic rides, especially the international ones. I loved it. Well done.
Thank you. You Amazing said, I was so excited when I saw you guys on the Hangang path while I was out riding with my dog. I almost screamed with joy. Thanks so much for visiting. The video is stunning as always. You should have said hello. We just stopped and had a little chat.
Yeah.
Thanks.
People often scream when Ollie goes past, don't they? For various different reasons. And then Wes Hicks said, I instantly clicked on this video. Korea is my favourite country to travel to by far. I never, ever expected to see one of my favourite YouTube channels do an episode there. This video was literally made for me. If you get the chance to go back, you should really check out Jeju. It's an incredibly beautiful location. Do you know where that is?
Yeah, I did see Jeju. It's an island right below South Korea. It looks absolutely incredible. It looks like a absolute prime cycling destination. So definitely have to check that out one time.
Nice. Mm. That is cool. Then underneath that aforementioned 7 decades of Tour de France bikes, Robert GT said, Dan used one arm to hold up 11 kilos. Si used two arms to hold up 10 kilos. I mean, what we were saying earlier about training, you've got to be specific with your training. I will admit, Dan has done a little more in the gym than me over the last lifetime.
Yeah.
Basically. What you didn't see is that my two-arm hold-up of 10 kilos was quite wobbly. So there was a lot of quivering going on there.
Matthew Hare 6110 said, it's incredible how much innovation there has been in the last 2 decades. It's like the Cambrian explosion for bike tech. Just 10 to 25 years, not 10 to 25 million years.
Yeah. I mean, it has literally been bonkers. When you see it all lined up there, essentially nothing really happened for most of cycling. And then suddenly, the last 20 years, it's just gone absolutely bonkers, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, definitely.
Pretty cool. We've lived through an incredible time, Connor.
Yeah.
But where's it going to go next?
I'm going to drop a grenade in there, but I think it's the disc brakes that have just allowed bike design to just, develop, when you think about it.
Crikey.
It is, though. You can have wider tyres, you're more free to choose your bike designs. You're not restricted by rim brakes. I'm sorry. I know. This is why I was like, I don't want to throw a grenade in here. But I have.
I feel like we better wrap things up, mate. Well, I'll just very quickly tell you what's coming up on the channel. We've got Beginners to 100 Miles. That's with Naomi, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you guys are off to Finland this weekend.
Yeah, looking forward to the Saima Cycle Tour.
That's super cool. And then on Saturday, can Ollie Bridgewood keep up with a Tour de France cyclist in training, which I cannot wait to see. That was filmed out at Sierra Nevada in the altitude camp of the Lotto team in the lead up to the tour. So that's going to be an absolute banger, that one. And then also worth mentioning that Dan has, well, and Toby, who's just sat behind the camera, have been out in Barcelona shooting loads of tech content. So make sure you head over to GCN Tech. If you haven't seen the videos already, there's 3 of them on there. Mouth-watering tech videos, aren't there?
A lot of new tech at the tour.
Yeah, indeed it is. Right. Well, the only thing to finish on, Connor, is our nugget.
Our nugget.
Yeah.
Well, like we said, we haven't really planned this bit.
Well, there's a couple of things I've been thinking of. Firstly, the GCN Megabase Fantasy Tour de France League. How's that working out for you, buddy?
I'm like low mid pack, but I've got like there's been a stipulation with my team. I wasn't allowed to select Pogacar.
Why not?
Well, I'm in the GCN League. I'm also in the Big Dunn Family League, and the senior figures in the Dunn Family League banned everyone from selecting Pogacar.
No way.
Yeah, they decided to liven things up this year, so we wouldn't all select Pogacar, basically.
Well, okay, my tactic, and I say this as someone who's terrible at these things, I basically spent all my money on Pogacar and Vingegaard.
Okay.
And then basically everyone else cost me between 6 and 4 points.
Yeah, okay.
So I've got a team of misfits supporting the two big dogs.
Okay.
So I'm feeling pretty confident about my chances.
Yeah, it's an interesting strategy. I like getting involved in the strategy. I've gone sprint heavy as well. That's my other tactic. I've gone Van der Poel, Philipsen, Pedersen, and someone else I've forgotten.
Nice. Right, and then the other thing, I'm hoping to be here next week, but given that Alex and I are off tomorrow to ride for 360 gravelly kilometres around London, can't promise anything.
In a heatwave.
Yeah, so we're doing something called the London 360, and we're being chased all the while by top gravel pro Jensen Young from the Ribble Outliers.
No, but it's going to be really cool, this. It's a cracking route around the outskirts of London. You'd be surprised at what you pick up in terms of gravel.
I mean, I think it's a three-day bikepacking trip. It would be absolutely amazing. Doing it as a wanner.
It's going to be punchy.
It's going to be really punchy. So anyway, the chances are that if you watch this show promptly when it comes out, we'll still be out there. So, you know, if you live in the wilds of Epping Forest, come and keep your eyes peeled for me and Alex. We'll be there somewhere, probably, hopefully, still moving. Anyway, that's pretty much what we got going on this week. You're off to Finland, I'm going around London.
Good luck, mate.
See you back here next week.
Yep, see you next week.